What's up, guys? Welcome back to Rebranding Safety, the podcast and YouTube channel, translating health and safety to help you save lives and save money. Today, we've got another guest on. Richard Kennard's going to talk all about sales skills. Sometimes health and safety professionals can be awesome at their job, but if they don't know how to sell their concepts, their ideas, their plans, whatever they need to sell, means nothing. So Richard's going to tell us how to sell. There's some really interesting comparisons there. Let's get into the podcast.
Health and safety is almost a victim of its own success.
Weird and oppressive regime of health and safety regulations.
A huge fire engulfs a tower block in London.
Children being forced to wear goggles to play conkers at school.
Worst oil field disaster, 164 dead.
Rebranding Safety, the modern health and safety podcast, crushing the stereotype. And your host, James McPherson.
Personally, I find a lot of safety professionals quite good at their job, but don't really know how to sell their ideas and get people on board. So today we've got Richard who joined us, who's business development executive from AW Safety. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, mate. Thank you very much for having me.
That's a nice title. Business development executive. I like that.
Well, it's about to change actually to business development manager as well. So if you'd have given me another couple of weeks, it'd have been PDM.
do you want to introduce yourself? I suppose, Rich, do you want to like take us through how you got to be in the business development executive? Then I suppose.
Sure. Well, it's not really much to tell in regards to why I'm where I am now, other than I kind of fell into sales. That's the best way to sort of put it. I was working in a kitchen and I needed a job that wasn't in a kitchen. And I just sort of, I saw this job and it was, you know, it was advertised as, oh, you can earn loads of money and blah, 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 and all this sort of stuff. So I went for it and got it. And anyway, it turned out to be one of those pyramid schemes, charity door knocking. So it was an absolute nightmare, but it was a baptism of fire into sales. You know, I was knocking on 100 doors a day, getting all sorts of lovely language thrown at me. Did that for 6 months in the absolute freezing cold. It was through the winter. It was the point where I genuinely couldn't sign people up because my hands were shaking and all sorts of stuff. But so after that, everything else in regards to sales seemed so much easier because it was, you know, from knocking on people's doors to just making calls to other businesses, you know, it became a lot easier. So everything I've done has always been sales based or customer service based. I've got a degree in performing arts, which really, really helps because I'm just quite an open person. And, you know, I don't like to say an extrovert. I don't like to label it so easily, but I'm certainly not shy when it comes to talking to people. So that helps. And essentially how I started and where I am now, I actually did a bit of sales training for someone at AW Safety. I met Adam, really, really nice guy. Got on with him and his wife really, really early on. And then recently he basically just sort of tapped me up for a job and the rest is history, I guess.
Okay, cool. Cool. What kind of chef are you? That's quite, that's interesting. Your story is nearly exactly the same as mine, except mine was safety and yours was sales. So I used to be a chef as well.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I learned to be like a proper chef in a village pub and then they went over to like microwave food. So yeah. I ended up in a pub that did microwave food anyway. And I ended up leaving because I just thought I don't want to be a microwave technician for the rest of my life.
Yes, no, it's a bit of a nightmare.
Nice. So I suppose it's difficult, but I'm not a salesman, and if I'm honest, I kind of got that fucking out salesman kind of attitude. But like, is it different from being like, you know, I think I judge car like salesmen on car salesmen, and I find they're like a different breed within sales. Yeah, would that be fair to say?
It depends. So yeah, in the sales training I used to do, bear in mind I used to do car sales. So and in the first car sales job I worked for a company who I believe are bus now actually called Carcraft.
Okay.
And I mean they were an absolute nightmare, and I left there I think it was two and a half months, because I realised that they're not the sort of people I wanted to be, you know, associated with. They were targeting people based on their credit score, and they were, you know, they were just being really low, and they want, you know, they wanted to get people that had no option, basically. And they were horrible people, to be honest, a horrible company. And I left, and I thought, oh, God, I've been trying to get into car sales for a long time. But then I saw an advert for a local company, because I thought, well, I'm not going to get into car sales. You know, if this is what car sales is like, I'm not going to do it, because I'm an honest person and I'm a nice person and I don't want to mess people around. So so I thought, well, I'm not going to do it if that's what it's about. I happened to see a job advert for a local family-run one. I thought, right, okay, well, we'll see what it's about. So I put my, you know, my name forward for that, as along with a load of other jobs that weren't car sales. Went for the interview, and the first thing I said to him was, look, if you're looking for someone that's going to, you know, lie to get a sale, if you're looking for someone that's going to push people into things and, you know, do whatever it takes to get a sale, that's not me. You know, I'll work my ass off to get the sale, but I'm not going to lie. I'm not going to cheat. I'm not going to push someone into something that's not right for them just to get a sale. And they hired me based off that, because they said, look, we're based on a family reputation. We're a family business, and it's, you know, it's repeat business that's kept us going. So we want honest people. So, yes, I think that Arthur Daly sort of thing that you get when you think of a slimy salesman is the instant thing. And that's going back to my original point. When I was doing sales training, one of the things I used to get people to do was, you know, what is your first opinion? You know, write down what you think when you think of a salesperson. And everyone would, you know, slimy, liar, cheat. You know, it was all the negative connotations, which is a real shame. You know, and in America, salespeople are looked up to. You know, they are, they're really, you know, people go, wow, you're in sales, okay. Whereas over here, obviously, it's, oh, for God's sake, here we go again, you know. So it's a bit of a shame, but unfortunately, the few have ruined it for the many, I think, so... Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think the safety industry can relate to that. So that must be quite a unique position to be a salesman with a negative perception, rightly or wrongly, and then in an industry that is difficult to sell. Mm. So it's quite challenging.
I think the difference is, and you know, I say to everyone, you know, I get a lot of people that will talk to me about health and safety, and I say to them, I don't know anything about health and safety, and I'm not, you know, Adam knew that about me. I've never worked in health and safety before. He brought me on because he wanted someone that would just put the brand out there, that would, you know, okay, right, well, we need, you know, we need a gap analysis, or we need some fire extinguisher servicing, or we need, you know, whatever. Who do we know? Oh, hang on a minute, that annoying guy, Richard, that's rang us 4 times, in, you know what I mean, in this year, and we know him because he's constantly ringing us, you know, not badgering, but, you know, we know him because he says he'll call in 3 months, and he does call in 3 months, and, you know, and we have a conversation, and he's actually an all right guy. But why he started to get a sales team is because with a lot of health and safety consultancies and things like that, a lot of them are one-man bands, for one. So obviously they don't have the time to sell all the time, because while they're working, they haven't got the time to sell. You know, if you're a client, you can't then be spending all day on their phones trying to sell your business. So sales in the health and safety industry is a bit of a... there's not many doing it. And so I think it's actually quite new to have someone that is just specifically doing the sales. Obviously, I'm learning more as I go, and you know, the more calls I make where, you know, someone's asking me about something, I'll make a note of it, and then I'll ask Adam, and you know, or what, I'll ask one of the consultants, and so it is a massive learning curve. But you know, at the end of the day, if you're a nice person, I hate to say gift of the gab, it's a very, you know, blasé term. But if you can talk to people, and if you know what questions need to be asked, and if you can pick up on things that they've said and go, oh, hang on a minute, there was something in that, let me ask another question. If you can take the conversation further, then, you know, you're always something positive going to come out of it. I always say there's never a bad call unless you come off that call not knowing any more than when you made the call. So even if you get an email, even if you get a name, you know, it's a positive call.
Okay, I like that. Do you find it difficult to sell safety to a point of view, like, let's say you went to a business and they originally wanted quite a lot, I don't know, like the gold standard from AWS, but then you get there and you think, well, actually, I don't think the gold standard is super for you because you're quite low risk. How do you deal with that kind of conflict? Because I suppose as a salesman, you want to sell the gold standard, don't you?
Again, I think it goes back to what we were just talking about in the car salespeople. I won't sell anyone something that isn't right for them. We've recently just got rid of a client because they weren't doing what we were telling them to. And at the end of the day, we could have just carried on sending them, you know, letters and going, you know, going to the visits and saying, well, you need to do this, you need to do this, you need to do this. And this isn't right and blah, blah, blah. And then sending them another letter. We could have kept the paper trail saying that we've done everything we need to do to make sure that they, you know, whether it's up to them, whether they follow it. But we didn't want to be associated with a company that doesn't take health and safety seriously. So we've got rid of them. And by the same token, if a company comes to me and says, okay, you know, obviously with the competent person packages would be the best sort of example for what you're talking about. So if someone comes to me and they say they need, for instance, they just like it's a one man band. I've had an instance of this recently, actually, a one man band. And literally all he needs is our name on his forms so that if the HSE come knocking, you know, he can say, well, I am getting competent advice, you know. And obviously we've got with the basic package of that, you do get 24-hour call out voice. You know, you can call us at any time. We'll give you advice. We'll give you help. But the basic package, basically, it's just our name. We act as your competent person. It's got, you know, you can call us and give, you know, we'll give you advice and everything, but everything else is chargeable. Then you've got the next stage up, which, you know, includes a few more things. For instance, your risk assessments, we'll write them for you. Some ad hoc training will be included, you know, non-accredited training, like your manual handling and things like that. We'll do in-house stuff for that. And then you've got your final one, which obviously just has absolutely everything. We'll help you with your CHAS accreditations, your ISO, all that sort of stuff. If someone comes to me as a sole trader and says, I just need this, I'm not going to try and push them onto the middle tier one and say, well, we'll give you training as well and we'll do this, and we'll, because there's no point. So, and Adam knows that about me, you know, again, his biggest thing is his reputation. So he doesn't want me to be lying to people or pushing people onto something that's not worthwhile for them. You know, yes, I've got to upsell and yes, I've got to, you know, up service and try and get them into better packages, but only if it's worth it for them. If not, then, you know, look, we'll accept your business on whatever level it needs to be at.
Mm. Yeah, it's an interesting position to be in, isn't it? I suppose inherently as a salesman, your desire is to upsell and stuff like that. But then on the flip side, like you say, it's... I posed a question to Christian on one of the other podcasts.
Oh, Christian Harris. Yeah.
Yeah, said to him, like, you know, how do you deal with that? And he said that his ideal solution would be he would go into a business and he'd have, say, six areas to look at. Three were fine, I don't need any work, and two were bad, need work. So he's like, then I don't look like I'm just saying I need it everywhere. So yeah. It's harder to sell, go in there and everywhere needs it because they just think I'm going to say that anyway.
Perfect. That's just jogged my memory of something that same sort of situation really. We went in and did what we call a gap analysis, and obviously I'm sure most people that are savers to know what this is. So, but just to, you know, for people that don't, you know, we'll go into a company and we'll look at the company and we'll say, right, okay, well, legislation says you need to be here. This is where you're at. So there's the gap between there. And then we'll give them an action plan of where they need to be, you know, what they need to do to get to the, you know, where they want to be. And it's, you know, much more in depth than what I've just made it seem, but that's the very basic term for it. And we went into a company I can't remember, but let's say 2 months ago. And we went in and there wasn't really much they needed to do. They were really good. You know, they were their health safety management systems were really good. Their risk assessments were really good. They were up to date on the training. They had guys that were, you know, IOSH managing safely and, you know, that were in date. And, you know, they were up to speed on everything they needed to be. There were a couple of things. You're all, you know, look, no one's perfect. You're always going to find little things. But we went in there and presented to them and we said, look, to be honest with you guys, you're really good. You know, you obviously take this really seriously. This is, you know, we were really impressed. And, you know, we gave them the feedback and we told them everything. You know, we said, look, these are the little things that we think you'd need doing. But other than that, this is where you're at. And they've used us and they actually said that basically what's happened is their health and safety manager was leaving. That's why they've come in to get the gap analysis, because they want to know what they need to do going forward and what they need to do to keep it at the same standard. And they used us because they actually had three companies go in and do a gap analysis. And the other two told them there was loads of stuff wrong, which they said, we know there isn't. You know, our health and safety manager is still here and, he, you know, he knows what he's talking about, and he, you know, we know it's not wrong. We know it's bang on. We just wanted to sort of see, you know, who we could trust and who we could go forward with. And I said, because we went in and we were honest with him, I said, look, we're not really going to get much work out of you because there's nothing really you need us to do. It ended up being a really good account for us. So I think there's a lot to be said for people that want to have that honesty and that transparency. And that's what I think sales should be. You know, you're always going to have the issue of trying to push through people's perceptions of, you know, and predispositions of Arthur Daly. You know, every time someone is, oh, you know, we get it in our, I get it all the time. I get phone calls from salespeople, and I'll always give them the time of day because I think, well, I'm doing the exact same job. But sometimes I just go, right, this person's not listening to me. They're not taking on board what I'm saying. They're just hammering out, I'm just another person. And that's when I get really frustrated with them. And it's the same on LinkedIn, you know, where people add you, you accept. I'll send, you know, every single person that sends me an invite, I will accept and say, thanks for, you know, your invite. How are you? You know, how's things at your current company? Whatever. Very nice message, nothing salesy whatsoever. And sometimes, obviously, as I'm sure you've had 1,000 times, they'll just hit you with a copy and paste message, which is just a bland, you know, how can, you know, this is what I do. Please buy from me if you're interested. Here's a link. And I instantly remove them, delete them, block them. It does my nut in. And it's that there's no personalization to it. And it's, you know, it's usually for a product that's just completely irrelevant. You know, it's like, you obviously haven't looked at who I am, where I am and what I do and what, you know, what I would potentially need. And so that's, I think that's, if you've got a company like AW Safety, you really want to be, you know, Adam's brand is his biggest thing. And it's really important to him. If a company turned around and said that we were doing something wrong, that would genuinely upset him. So, and it would genuinely affect him. So that's the most important thing. And that's what I basically sell about us.
That's nice. Yeah, it sounds good. It's that kind of, I suppose it's that kind of building relationships as opposed to building a sale.
Of course. 100%.
How do you find, like, you know, like you mentioned about that kind of competent person package. How do you find that your customers maybe don't take ownership of safety because they think it's AW Safety's ownership, or do you have to step in and say, well, yeah, we are the competent person for you, but you still own that responsibility, and really hammering that message, or they know that?
It depends on the level. Obviously, it depends on the level they're doing it. So we've just bagged a new client and we are doing everything for them. Like, you know, because with the competent person packages, it's essentially, you know, you get a health and safety manager for an absolute fraction of the price. So if they're doing the top tier. So in that case, we are their health and safety person. We do take on board for them. Now, that being said, they do need to obviously, you know, they do need to take it seriously because we're not there 24/7, you know, on their, you know, we haven't got a consultant there watching them, you know, their engineers and making sure that they're doing everything right. But for the lesser packages, you know, it is much more of a, you know, let's say, for instance, the middle package where we sort of write your risk assessments for you, we'll do, you know, other things as well. You know, there's lots of other little, you know, bits and bobs that we do. I mean, to be honest, we tailor them all depending on what the company needs. You know, we'll do CHAS for some companies, but that's completely irrelevant for a lot of companies. So we'll add something else. You know, maybe they'll want construction lines, so we'll do that. You know, or maybe they'll want ISO. So, you know, whatever they need, we'll look at targeting that. But it's just a really difficult. It's getting that balance, and we like to work with companies that take health and safety seriously. So if we go into a company, we do something in the gap analysis, we do a climate survey, and essentially it's an anonymous survey to every single member of the staff. We ask them to give it to every single one of them, and we collect them in. And it's essentially to find out what the culture of the company is, because it's all well and good a company saying, yeah, we take you really seriously, we really believe it. You don't really get that until you find out, you get all these papers back and you say, right, well, look, you say you take it really seriously, but according to your 50 staff, you don't, because they're saying you don't, you know, that if it costs money, you won't do it. You know, they're saying that you're buying, you know, PPE from the lowest bidder, which, let's be fair, everyone does, but it's not suitable. It's not sufficient. You know, we're looking at your risk assessments and they're not suitable or sufficient. You know, there's a lot that takes, that goes into it. It's the climate survey just to get an idea of the culture of the company. If they, you know, and you will get some companies that will take us on and they will want to use us for everything, but they take it very seriously and they like, you know, they'll go, can we have a meeting? We want to find out what's going on. We need to know where. Some companies will go, look, do it for us. Thanks very much. Call us if there's a problem. So it's striking that fine balance.
Yeah. I think it, you're right. It's that fine balance is probably the best way to say it, really.
Yeah.
So what I like the, So I'm a massive advocate of like small to medium sized enterprises really probably doing safety themselves, like doing it themselves, and then maybe coming to consultants or hiring a safety professional for very specific reasons for like specialist advice.
Yeah.
And I think you know, I'm not overly kind on this podcast to consultants But I suppose in their defense, there are some good ones, and it's the same as salesmen. I think, like you were saying earlier, there's a few ruining it for the most of us. But I think there's this kind of culture in the UK that like we hire a safety person or we hire a consultant and that's it, it's their job. And I'm constantly saying, you know, I don't own safety. As your safety professional, I don't own it. I am just your advisor. I'm just right hand. You know, you've got to come to me and say, what do you think of this? And I'll say, I think this, but ultimately it's your decision.
Yeah. I think there's an element of when it becomes a tick box exercise, that's when it's a problem. You know, I did a post about this not too long ago, I can't remember now, but anyway, I was saying about, you know, it's sad when companies treat it like a tick box exercise, that it's just, unfortunately, we've done it to ourselves. The country has done it to ourselves in regards to people that claim for things that don't happen, I had an instance, and I won't say any names or, you know, but I, let's just say I worked at a leisure centre, and the, you know, the filters around the pool, we used to have to every morning pull them up, you know, obviously clean them out and then put them back in. Now they had little grates covering them, and this one woman, walked that way several times, and there was no reason for her to walk that way. It was right around the back of the pool. No one ever walked around there other than us. But for some reason, this woman kept doing it, kept walking there. And then basically, somehow, while no one was looking, she fell down one of these, you know what I mean? Like her leg fell in it. Next minute, the company's being sued. I've been pulled in for interviews and all sorts of stuff, you know, saying, right, what did you do it? And because it was me on in the morning, and so it was my job to check the filter in the morning and clean it out and put the lid back on and all that sort of stuff, and it became an absolute palaver. But you know, and I don't mean to, you know, unfortunately it is case by case, but I don't believe for a second she genuinely fell down it. I thoroughly believe that she was like, hang on a minute, there's something in this for me. If I fall down there, I can claim, you know. And there's been, you know, I know people that have seen open grates on the, you know, and so they've pretended to fall down them, you know, and called the council, I've just fallen down the grate, because it's there. Next minute they're getting sued. And unfortunately, because of that, insurances are obviously having to go through the roof. And the HSE have to get involved, and companies are terrified. And I understand, you know, if something bad happens, their first thing is, this is going to cost me. And I get that. But that's unfortunately what we've done to ourselves. So, you know, the insurance companies can only operate on what, you know, they can't lose money. They're a business at the end of the day. So they have the right and, you know, lift their prices. Again, it's a few ruining it for the many. You know, I had a car crash years ago. I didn't claim for whiplash because I didn't have whiplash. And, you know, my neck wasn't hurting. But I know so many people that would, just because, well, it's a couple of grand to do nothing. Mm. You know, in regards to safety culture and what you were saying about some companies will take it on board and just they want to hand it over to you. I think it's now, where's the blame? You know, and when it becomes a tick box exercise and the blame exercise, and right, can we prove that we did everything we can, that it's not our fault? And it's all about fault and blame. And, you know, unfortunately, that's the way it is now. And we have to move with that. I think it's a real shame, because health and safety now is looked at as, how much money am I going to save if I do everything right by not getting sued? Mm. Rather than let's save someone's life, because that's important.
Mm. Yeah, you're right. You bang on. I 100% agree with you. I do think, and I suppose the irony of it, and this must be difficult for you as well, but the irony of it is sometimes you have an accident or you have an incident or whatever, and you might end up your insurer paying out 2 grand. And for their every day, you know, Joe Bloggs, That's a trip to Benidorm or whatever. I don't
yeah,
know.
Yeah.
And that to them, it's like, bloody hell, £2,000, awesome. To an insurer, it's like pennies.
Yeah.
But what that does is, like you say, it starts that cycle, and then people think, oh, okay. And then the company think, well, we don't want to do that again because our premiums have gone up. So they do more. And actually, it's trying, for your point of view, I suppose, it's trying to say and trying to sell as a consultant and a salesman within the consultant team, is saying, actually, you're better off doing nothing in this case and actually not changing your process and actually just working on maybe your culture, but not physically implementing a form or some gloves or a new grate or whatever. But sometimes it's hard to, you see it a lot, I'll see in meetings, be like, actually, you know, we've just had a fire, but we're better off doing nothing.
Yeah.
Because that was completely out of our control. It wasn't our fault. And actually, I think we've done everything that we can. What we need to do is maybe engage with the customer or something. You know what I mean? There's always something to do. But yeah, I think businesses want something tangible. They're like a piece of paper that says again. Like you said, a checkbox.
Exactly. Yeah. You can, you know, and like you say, it's, even if it's like, we did everything right, we did everything we could, they still want a report that says you did everything right, you did everything you could. It's never just a case of that they look at it and go, you know what? Yeah, fair play. Everything was done to the best of your ability. And it was just some guy who was an idiot who, you know, because you can't account for humans. You know, we are idiots. And I don't, you know, we're all idiots. As smart as we are, as brilliant as we are, or as, you know, and obviously I'm using very layman's terms here, but as stupid as we are, you know, that you can't account for, you know, people say about common sense. I hear this all the time. There's no such thing as common sense. I don't believe in common sense, because it's only common sense for you in this instance, but your common sense is different to my common sense. Mm-hmm. So, for instance, you, James, obviously, you know a lot more than me in regards to health and safety. So certain things that you'll take on board, you know, I won't. So that's common sense to you, but it's not common sense to me. And it's just, I find it so fascinating that, you know, that we just go, oh, well, you know, it's common sense. He shouldn't be around there. He shouldn't be doing that. But I've seen pictures of, you know, people smoking and using a gas, not an empty, because there's no such thing as an empty gas canister, obviously, you know, it's just the pressure runs out, using a gas canister as an ashtray, you know what I mean? And it's like, and you're telling me that's common sense. Like, you can't, there's only so much you can do as a human to go to, you know, unless you watch every single member of staff, unless you have security cameras watching every single member of staff at all times, and you can watch every screen at the same time and make sure that they're doing their job as exactly as they should be, it's impossible. You know, it's absolutely impossible. It's like, right, you shouldn't put your hand in there because, you know, it's a machine that cuts. But you see, you know, oh, it stopped and, oh, I could just grab it. You know, I did it when I was a kid. You know, me and my friends were smashing conkers with a hammer as a kid, and I saw this conker that I wanted, so I went and grabbed it. I got my fingers broke because the lad was, you know, cracking it. How stupid is that? But, you know, at the time I thought I was quite intelligent. You know, I was like, oh, I want that conker. I could have said, mate, don't crack any, you know, can we stop? But I just thought, oh, I've got time, and he's not going for that one, so I just went for it, and he was going for that one, and he cracked two of my fingers. But, you know, it's there's no accounting for humans, and human error is always going to be the biggest factor in health and safety.
Mm. No, you're right. It's funny, actually, you're saying that, and it reminded me of, I was dealing with a property the other day, and it was basically, we were trying to work out the fire strategy of this building, and there were people, that's a purpose-built block of flats. I said, it's not a purpose-built block of flats. I said, it is a purpose-built block of flats. It's not. And I know it's not. And they said, why? I said, because when it was a dilapidated, vacant, empty factory, I was about 13 years old, or maybe a bit older, and me and my mates broke into it. Mm. And there was no flats there. So I'm 100% sure that has converted factory into flat. And they were like, you're health and safety guy. And I just couldn't compute that I was a teenager once, and teenagers do stupid shit.
Yeah.
My boss was like, are you sure it's not purpose built? I said, I broke into it when I was a kid, and he was like, no. I was like, well, that was quite funny. I suppose then, like, what are like the fundamental skills of sales of people, like a consultant, your consultant? So a consultant in your team, if they were saying to you, well, we want to put a bit of upselling with our consultants, for example, what would you say are the fundamental skills that safety professionals are lacking? From maybe not as well from upskilling, maybe that's a bad example. Like, how can we as safety professionals use sales skills to sell safety? And not as a product, but as a idea or something like that? Because that's something I've struggled with.
Yeah. It the issue is it's person to person. And this is why I one of the reasons why I stopped doing sales training in a way, because I was training this as I was doing it, but also, you know, for instance, a little bit of a tangent, but I won't go long on it. These people that do, that, you know, I don't believe in business coaches. I don't believe in business coaches. I don't believe in, you know, your Grant Cardone or, you know, 10 times your business. So, right, okay, well, why aren't you just doing that then? Oh, wait, you are. And that business is telling other people on how to 10 times their business. I'm sorry, it's utter rubbish. It's absolute rubbish. You know, otherwise you'd just be working for a company bigger than Amazon. You know what I mean? You just own a company that was bigger than Amazon. If you genuinely believe that you've got the skills to 10 times your business, then just start a business that, you know, that gets bigger than, you know, Microsoft and Apple and, you know, but they can't, but they can sell, you know, all it is selling a dream, and people want to get rich quick. And so, unfortunately, there is no set sales skill. You know, I've read a load of sales books, and when I was younger, I used to think, oh, brilliant, this is great, and this is really works. And this, you know, and people say, you know, there's all these different things. There's like the ABCs, you know, of sales, and obviously it used to be always be closing, but that's been changed, and, you know, and there's the new ones. And unfortunately, it's different per person. It depends who you're selling to. And it depends on the company, depends on the culture, and you can't find that until you ask some questions. So my biggest thing is questions, 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 questions. Learn more about the company, get that relationship with them, and then just start asking about what they want. So some companies will react to the post I did the other day about, you know, fines. They will look at that and go, Jesus Christ, you know, oh, they got fined 1.6 million for a bit of racking, hitting someone on the head. You know, right, I don't want that. We have racking. So what can I do? I'm going to go to a health and safety consultant. I'm going to get someone to come and inspect our racking. You know what I mean? Whatever. Some people won't respond to that because they'll go, well, no, ours is really good. And we're not, you know, we take it really, really seriously. So there's no point in you showing them fines. They know that, you know, and some people know the fines and they know what it is. And, you know, and they've already taken it to the next level of health and safety anyway. The key factor for me is you can't blanket it to everyone, which is why the, you know, the messages in on LinkedIn where it's just, you know, oh, thanks for accepting, you know, do you know I sell bananas? Here you go, you know, hit follow a link to this to buy all the bananas you could ever want in your life. And, you know, and it's like, well, I'm allergic to them, so shut your mouth. You know what I mean? It just doesn't work. Now, if you learn from me that I love bananas and that they're my favourite, you know, they're my favorite thing to eat in the world, and that I play tennis all the time. And obviously I'm being a bit weird here, but, and I just absolutely, I spend a ridiculous amount on bananas, then it makes sense for you to offer me bananas at a much reduced price. So that's the thing, it's learning what they need. So don't go into a company, and I've done this, you know, we've all done it. Don't go into a company, doing a health and safety audit, see that they keep a really good training matrix and they keep on top of it, and you know they know when their people need training. Don't go in there and say, oh, do you know that we offer you know, software to keep an eye on your training matrix? What's, you know, there's no point. But if you notice that their fire extinguishers are out of, you know, that the services haven't been done, well, that's the sort of thing you want to be pushing. You know, you've got to plug that gap, but also you've got to build that relationship with them that they trust you. Because, you know, they always say people buy from people they like. I don't believe that. People talk to people they like. People buy from people they trust. So that's the key thing. And you've got to earn their trust through real means, through being honest and open. If you're doing it just to make a sale, if you're talking to those people and dealing with them, and I'm using that term dealing with them just because you want the money, well, you'll probably get some money. Yeah, you'll probably get a bit of their business, but it's not going to be the longevity that you want. If you actually like that person, they like you, and they, you know, they're the sort of people. You know, I like it when I get off a call and they say, oh, you know what, we've been using the same guy for 15 years. The MD really likes him. I like that. I go, well done to that guy. you know, or well done to that person. They've done really well. They've obviously built this relationship. So the key things, mate, build relationship, genuine relationship. Find out what it is they actually need, you know, through questions, and just try and plug that gap. But be honest and open. Don't just go in. If you're in their area, go in for a cup of tea. Don't go in because you plug in a new thing. You know, just drop in. Hey, mate, you got time for a cuppa? Brilliant. And don't talk to them about anything you do. They'll love that. They'll absolutely love it. I love going to companies that are, you know, that are clients of ours or that aren't clients. They're just people I've been talking to, and just having a coffee with them and chatting about the day. There's a guy that I know. He's a helicopter pilot. He's going through his. He's been having lessons. I know that he's having his final sort of test soon. So I can't wait to talk to him about that. I'm not going to try and sell to him. I'm just going to talk to him about, you know, can you fly a helicopter on your own now? And when can I get in it with you? You know what I mean? So that's the thing.
Mm. I suppose that would apply to like an internal safety professional or even just a manager as well, I suppose, is just having that good relationship with your teams. And a bit, I said, a young like safety professional, as much as I say young, like I'm really old, but like, you know, a new safety professional messaged me a long time ago and I knew them and they were like, you know, what kind of advice would you give? And I said, you never go over the top, because if you go over the top once and you implement something once that's not needed, or the business think, God, this is nuts, and they don't agree with it, regardless of whether you think it's right or not, that you'll break that trust. And you need to build that relationship. And that's like a, you know, not there's no specific example there. It's just really ask your question, like, do we genuinely need this? And I suppose it's exactly the same as what you just said about building relationship, building trust, you know, go and have a cup of tea with your teams and things like that. And not be like, even if it's you're going down from a manager's point of view, you're not going down to be like, you know, how long till that product's out the door? Just like, how are you? How's the wife? How's the kids?
Yeah,
and that, I think that makes massive
difference. Yeah, 100%, mate. It really does. And, you know, how many times have you heard, you've known where the, not just health league, let's say any product is always, you know, is bought, yo, the MD, yeah, it's his best mate. So, some of our things are provided by Adam's friends, you know. I'm sure we could get it cheaper elsewhere, but I ain't going to look. And if anyone calls, sorry, yeah, we've already sorted, thanks, because it's through his friends. You're much more likely to trust your friends and to, you know, think that they're going to do you the best deal they can. And even if they're not doing the best deal, like money-wise or monetary or, you know, financially, they're certainly going to look after you if anything, you know, if anything hits the fan. You know, they're going to be there and they're going to offer you that extra, they're going to go that extra mile. And that's what people want. You know, they want value for money. Yes, they want it at the cheapest price, but they also want value for money.
Interesting. How do you make health and safety a value for money when sometimes the better thing would be to spend a lot of money on something? So let's say, for example, I always get really annoyed, right? Because if you've listened to the podcast Competency versus PPE, you probably can tell how annoyed I get around it. But like competency, increasing competency or upskilling teams can be quite expensive, you know, and getting it right, getting them on the right course and the right training. And if you do it right, you can do it over a long period. It's never just one course here and one course there. It's not enough. It's constant coaching and training. That costs a lot of time and money. Was PPE tangible, cheap, quick, easy? Mm. So, you know, it's that kind of, how do you convince a business that actually we'll get value for money by spending 3 years upskilling this team of people? And actually, you're probably not going to see a result for another 10 years. Like, that's how does a safety professional do that? Like, from a safety point of view?
It's so difficult because with some people you can't. I'm not one of these that believes that every single person will be sold to. Some people just can't. I've had an instance where I went to a thing the other day for one of our clients who just got into providing electric charging points, obviously for electric cars and things. And it was really interesting because I was chatting to them about it. And I was saying how I was looking into, recently I've got a new car and I was looking into getting an electric car. Because, you know, savings that you make are just crazy. unfortunately, the price to buy them is so much more initially. So it's that same sort of thing, you know, because you don't see the results till much, you know, much later. You know, you'd have to drive the car for 3 years to see the savings. Because unfortunately, the bulk fee at the start is 10 grand more, you know, than the like-for-like version in petrol. And some people just can't, you know, you've got a budget. A lot of companies have got a budget and they can't go over that, you know. So if you go to a company and you say, you know, they say, right, I've got a 10 grand budget. Okay, well, it's going to cost you 14 grand to do the right thing, which will save you money in the long run, or it's going to cost you 5 grand to buy the right PPE and, you know, and then, you know, you're fine. But, oh, you know, you're going to have to redo that. And, you know, and when the, you know, like with the gloves and obviously with the new RPE rules around welding and, you know, these things change all the time. So it might be fine for now, but give it 2 years time. A, the PPE using is going to need replacing anyway, but it's just going to, you know, the rules are going to change. So now your gloves that were a 5-cut resistant are now only a 2-cut resistant. So we're going to have to change. You're going to have to get new ones. So it's that constant thing. And that's the only way I can do it is if you really show them. The best example I can think of, I was a while ago, so my missus is in property and in HMOs and lettings and things like that. So we saw this post, which was really interesting, from a company, I believe, I can't remember the name, oh, Comfort Lettings, that was it, Comfort Lettings. They're on LinkedIn, so, you know, feel free to have a look at it. The post was ages ago, to be fair, but anyway, their rates are quite high. Their percentage of what they charge the landlords to manage the properties are quite high. But they did a breakdown and it was really, really good. So I think it was like 12% and a lot charge, you know, 10, 8, whatever, you know, lower than that even. So they did a breakdown of it and they said, okay, right, well, you can pay us 12%, which, you know, is going to cost you this much, you know, and they did, you know, so let's say it's £1,000 a month. It's better to pay 12% of that £1,000 and get a quality person in, you know, like he's been vetted and they know, you know, he's been credit checked, they know he's going to pay rent on time, they know he's going to, you know, needs the place for at least 6 months, whatever, but they've been really quality checked, so you know you're going to get someone decent. Obviously there's always going to be instances where it doesn't work, but anyway, long term it's going to be much more beneficial than getting someone, yeah, okay, let's say 8%, so you pay less per person, you know, to this company, but they're not being vetted properly, they're not being quality checked, they're not being, you know, credit checked, so they're going to be late on the bills, they're going to just leave without telling you, you know, there's going to be a load of issues, so it's actually going to cost you more in the long term. So when you see it in a breakdown like that, where it's an actual, you know, you go, right, well, this is us, and this is how much it's going to cost you, and this is how much you're going to make. This is them, this is how much it's going to cost you, yeah, less, okay, fair enough, but this is how much you're going to make, and it's going to be much less. So there you are, price-wise, we're better. That's the only way I believe that you can do it, if you break down the costs and if you break down the fundamentals of it and show them it, you know, there is something to be said with the visual, you know, presentation of seeing it and going, okay, you know, and that you'll still get the objection. Yeah. Okay. Fair enough, mate. Really good. But it's going to cost, it's just going to cost more than we can think right now. We presented to a company recently and they were a lot wrong, to say the least. And so we presented to them a couple of options. You know, one of them was, look, just pay us to come in and we'll get this sorted and it's going to cost you this much, or pay us to come in, get this sorted and stay on as an act as your competent person and it's going to be this much. You know, they were like, look, we'd love to just go in and take you on full time, but it's just, you know, we haven't got that in the budget right now. So unfortunately you have to really show the prices and you have to show the potential gains and the potential losses. And there's something to be said in showing it visually. If it's not shown visually, if you're just telling them, or if you just say, look, this will work out better in the long run. Yeah, okay, sure it will, mate. Anyway, what's the cheapest option? Mm. That's all they're going to think. It's all about money.
Mm. Yeah, it's a good point, because there's these kind of new fire extinguishers come out. Well, they've been out a long time, but when they first came out, They only did real kind of general risk, so they only really replaced powder, and you couldn't really have them for higher risk properties. So you couldn't have, for example, in a boiler room where you need the CO2, you still need that, but they never need servicing, so they have a 10-year life cycle, they never need servicing, but they're really expensive to buy.
Yeah.
When they first came out, they kind of got a bit of a bad rep. They got, I think the NFCC, I could be wrong, it could have been somewhere else, like tore them apart. And then I thought, well, they're never coming back. And then they came back and they were much better products. They've got like a higher risk one. And I'm not endorsed by them in any way, shape or form, but I'm just impressed by the product. And the last two businesses I've worked for could have made massive savings over a long run if we purchased some of these. But it was such a long time until you start seeing that saving, that they just didn't want to do it because it was such a big upfront payment. Even if you phased it, it was quite costly.
Yeah.
And then such a long time, it was just not feasible in their mind, and they would rather just, you know, spend it on painting the front of the wall because that's visual and it looks good and the customers think, oh, that's good. Nobody gives a shit about fire extinguisher. It's a funny old game, and like you say, that's interesting about breaking it down. I think a lot of safety professionals could do a better job at maybe actually breaking down what we're talking about here. You know, we're going to do a risk assessment. Okay, what is a risk assessment? Well, let me take you through that process. It's this, it's a conversation, it's that, it's legally this, it stops this, it does this. And maybe actually explaining what they do instead of that kind of information is power at the moment. Yeah. Where we're like, I am the person that does the risk assessment. If I don't tell you what that means, I keep my job.
Yeah. It's interesting as well because we had an instance recently where the risk assessments were, to be fair, terrible as well, but the staff that were doing the jobs had never seen the risk assessments. So it's like, what's the point in doing risk assessments? Like, the only reason they were doing them was because, oh, we need a risk assessment. You know, yeah. It's a tick box exercise. It's going back to what we were saying earlier. And that was one of the things we pulled up. We were like, look, you know, at the end of the day, A, risk assessments aren't suitable or sufficient. They've not been written by someone who's a competent person. They've not got the right training, which clearly shows in, you know, in the quality of the risk assessments. But also, the staff don't know. Like, you know, they get a bit of training when they first start. Great. And then they crack on. But they've never seen a risk assessment. They don't know what to do. You know, they don't know what the risk assessment says. And unfortunately, that's a lot of businesses. When I worked at the leisure centre, which again will not be named, you know, we had a bit of a thing that said, you know, you were meant to look through the risk assessments because there was a low, you know, like for instance, for all the different chemicals that we'd handle, you know, they said, right, every day we want you to go through like two or three risk assessments, and then you have to sign them off and everything. But most people didn't, and what most people did was just sign it as if they had read it, but they didn't, you know, they didn't read it because they couldn't be bothered. And so, you know, in that case, that goes back to the human error thing that I was talking about. But, you know, there's got to be, and this goes to what we were saying about culture, if the company takes it seriously, then the staff take it seriously. If they genuinely believe you care, if they believe that the company cares about their well-being and their health, they will take it seriously. And they'll say, okay, right, yeah, we'll have a read. Let's, you know, if you take time, right, no, guys, look, unfortunately, look, I know it's a bit of a bore, but we are going to take a day out. We're going to, you know, just going to sit in the lunch room, whatever. We're going to read these risk assessments. We're going to go through them. We're going to, or, you know, someone's going to present them to you. Or we're going to do practical, you know, practical explanations of them when we're at the machines or whatever. It's a real cultural change from just, yeah, risk assessments are in the folder. Whenever you need it, just come and give us a shout. There's a big difference.
Yeah, there is, yeah. It's quite similar, like the stuff you're talking about in, like, you know, like the skills and sales are we're actually coming back around to just the culture. Like, it's what we keep coming back around to. And I feel like the podcast is becoming quite repetitive. You know, today we're talking about manual handling. What do we need? We need a good culture. Today we're going to talk about sales skills. What do we need? We just need a good culture, relationship. The same things, really. They're the same skills, aren't they? Just
the problem is with it, you're never going to get it. Because there's always going to be someone that doesn't care. We're never going to get to the stage in sales where people aren't looked at as Arthur Daly. You know, you're never going to get to the stage where health and safety is not looked at as a tick box exercise for some people. You're never going to get it because a lot of companies, you know, they do see it as a necessary evil when it comes to health and safety. You know, which it shouldn't be. You know, it should be, no, we're trying to save lives, we're trying to save, you know, thumbs and legs and arms, and you know what I mean? We're trying to save, you know, all these things. We're also trying to save you money by not getting sued. We're so far gone, and we're so far over the hill now for the things that have gone wrong and the things that, you know, have happened, that we're never going to be able to get back to it. So I think it's just a slow, gradual change of trying to get as many people on board with it as you can. You know, I'm not going to try and change people's minds on salespeople, because there are a lot of people that don't, you know, that just want to make a sale and just want your money. I make a joke out of it all the time. You know, when I was at an exhibit on Friday, you know, there was myself and there was a consultant there. I was talking to people, and Adrian would send them to me sometimes when he was talking to people. And I'd say, yeah, I'm the one that wants your money. You know, just make a joke out of it, because, you know, that's what they think of me. So I might as well make a joke out of it. And, you know, I'm not trying to change people's perceptions of salespeople. I can't. All I can do is change their perception of me. And I think that is what I'd say to every salesperson, every whatever you are, change their perception of you. And then that's all you can do. You know, make them think that you're a nice guy, you're a nice person. You know, that's all you can do. I can't make people think that salespeople are angels, because 90% of us aren't. You know, obviously I'm amazing. No, I'm just joking. you know, you've just got to focus on yourself and your own company and your own culture, and do the best you can with what you've got.
Mm. I think, like you're saying about, like, you can't change the culture of the salesman, but and I think we're in the same, as safety professionals, in the same kind of position, like you say. But I'm a massive believer in that culture change is infectious, and it's done one by one, and it will spread like a virus. So actually, you are changing the culture of sales by not being that stereotypical salesman. And eventually the next salesman that you see, or somebody listen to this podcast, they feel, I want to go into sales, and then they pick up skills from what you're saying. Actually, it's not about, you know, Wolf of Wall Street and stuff like that. It's about relationship building. It's about, you know, the stuff like that, culture change. You are making a difference, I think.
Well, I think the thing is, and there's I've got two examples of where you're just always going to have that negative response to a positive situation, which you're always going to have anyway. You know, Schadenfreude says it, you know, you're always going to have that. You want to see things fail. You know, we have that inbuilt in us that we want to see successful people fail, because there's that element of jealousy. But there's two things with this. So Lego, I think they're amazing. I think they're absolutely amazing with what they're doing in regards to, you know, getting rid of all plastics. And, you know, they said they were going to do that before they even had an idea of how to do it. They went, we're going to stop making Lego out of plastic, because obviously it's not good for the environment. Don't know how we're going to do it, but we're going to have a go. But we're definitely going to do it. And then they've also, I've read somewhere the other day, and I can't remember the exact fact, but I'm pretty sure they're running on complete renewable energy now, like as in their factories. So I just think, wow, amazing. But yeah, there's so many people that said, oh, they're only doing it as a publicity stunt. I'm like, well, first, if they are, who cares? Yeah. Like, well done. It's still an amazing achievement. It's still a great publicity stunt. If they are, I don't care. I'm fine with it being a publicity stunt. If they are genuinely running on 100% renewable energy, and if in however long it takes, let's say 20 years, whatever, you know, hopefully less, obviously. But if they're not using anything plastic, and they are not affecting the ozone layer, you know, and if they're really cutting down their, you know, their effect, then fantastic. And if it means that they're making a load of publicity out of it, fine, I would buy the products either way. And then the other one, the latest one, has been the straw gate with McDonald's, you know, where everyone's kicking off about it. And I saw a post from a guy that I really like, actually, Dan Smith, and I couldn't believe what he was saying. And I was like, I didn't comment on it, actually, I can't remember why, but I think I was just busy. But he was saying about, oh, you know, really well done for doing the straw, but they still got a lid that's plastic and blah, blah, blah. And he, you know, he was basically saying, why haven't they changed everything? I'm like, well, give them a goddamn chance. Like, you know how expensive it is to change the machines and the facilities and everything to get, you know, to change the whole thing would cost them like millions and millions, if not billions, to change the facilities and to change the machines that they need to do to change those plastic lids into paper or whatever they want to do. But it's small changes, it's incremental changes. And, you know, let's say that they've changed the paper straws. Apparently they're terrible. I haven't tried them. I don't drink milkshakes anyway. But, you know, I just think fair play to them. Well done. Let, you know, it's one small thing. Right now, the next thing is, yeah, change the cups. Change the cups or change the lids. Then the next thing is they change the wrapping that, you know, the wrapping in. It's all small changes, but we should be celebrating this. But there are people that are going, oh, well, they're only doing it for the publicity, or, oh, well, they've done it for that, but they haven't done it for that. And I'm like, oh, my God. Like, give them a chance. Like, let's, you know, let's be celebrating this and let's go, yeah, fair play to you. Well done. I appreciate the effort. Next thing. When's the next one? Like you say, it is, you know, hopefully it is a knock-on effect, and hopefully other companies go, you know what, fair enough, we need to change this, and we need to change our carbon footprint, and we need to stop making our things out of this and whatever. Hopefully it does it's a massive cultural change, but you'll always have those people that look at it and go, well, they're already doing it because of this.
it's so true, and it's something that I think, by the sounds of it, you're quite passionate about, and me and my wife are as well. My wife's got a really good saying. I think she has seen it on Facebook or something. For environmental improvement, not everybody needs to be perfect. No, not one person needs to be perfect. Everyone needs to be imperfect. So yeah, we just have that kind of, everyone does one thing better.
Yeah.
So, you know, one house says, well, we're not having any plastic in this house. Wow, that's a massive thing. But then the other house, but they still got a diesel car, and they've still, you know, you go on planes, and they still, I don't know, do whatever. And then somebody else goes, I'm going to get an electric car. I'm not going to use a diesel car. It's all those little things. And health and safety is exactly the same, I think. It's those little things, you know, that we don't celebrate in safety either. I've got a call with Stevie, who's been on a couple of times now, and we were talking about manual handling. And he's saying, we always talk about negative manual handling, you know, or you're not lifting right, you're not doing this right. But nobody goes over and high-fives somebody when they do lift right.
Yeah.
And that's the same thing. It's just a negative mindset that we're in all the time. And you're right. I remember when they started doing electric cars. They were like, oh, they're doing electric cars. This is amazing. And then it was like, well, yeah, it is. But it's made out of, like, precious metals that still have a massive impact on the environment. It's like, well, I get what you're saying. But come on. Like, we've got to do something.
With the wind farms. You remember when they did I had a massive argument with my auntie. I'll never forget this. I lost a lot of respect for her on this day. but we had this massive argument because she was petitioning against these wind farms because they were an eyesore and they didn't look very nice. I was like, are you kidding me? Like, A, I don't think they look that bad anyway.
No, I think they look cool.
Are you really going to kick off because they look bad? I'm like, A, you're going to be dead in like 20 years time anyway. So what do you care? Like, let's start looking forward, shall we? Let's start looking forward to your grandchildren, for your great-grandchildren, for your great-great-grandchildren. Let's start looking forward to their world rather than just going, I think it looks ugly, so I'm going to petition against it. I couldn't believe that someone I knew and held to such high regard thought that. And then they come out with all these ridiculous facts, and, you know, and I say facts, and I'm, you know, it's like, oh, well, it costs more, the carbon footprint is more to get them to where they're going to be than they're ever going to save. But, oh, shut up. Like, you know, oh, go on, where did you get this fact from? I'm guessing Facebook. You know what I mean? It's just, absolutely ridiculous that people, there's always going to be a negative sign. I mean, you're right, you know, people don't look at the good things and go, well done, that's amazing, you know, your DSC, you're really adhering to your DSC assessment, and you're using that sponge pad really well so that it's not going to affect your wrist. Well done, mate. You know, no one ever says well done for the things you're doing right. They only pick up on when you're doing wrong.
I do think environmentalists have got an even bigger battle than the health and safety professionals. That is, not my last job, but the job before used to be the classic health, safety, environment, and quality. The last two jobs before that, it was a big job. And when you look at it, you just think, you know, I really want to do something in environment. But actually, no one's got any buy-in. Like, it's hard enough to sell safety sometimes than it is to sell environmental benefits and changes, because, again, there is no benefit to it, to a business. You know, well, you could say good health and safety, good build business, but is good environmentally friendly businesses good business? Mm. Nobody knows yet. It's a battle they've got to deal with. I suppose we could probably go on all day, but if if we've got people listening to us, or safety professionals or business owners, and they're thinking, oh, I need to get better at being able to sell an idea or sell in general, how can they go? Is there any books or any courses? How can they go and improve that, in your opinion?
Like I said, I'm a bit wary of books and I'm a bit wary of courses, just because I've been on so many and I've read quite a few that I just go, this is plugging the same crap that the other one did. And this is, you know, it's just reworded in a slightly different way. I tell you a book that's really good, actually. And it's nothing to do with sales, but you certainly can adapt it and make sales. It's called Presence by Amy Cuddy. And she is a psychologist, but she's a very specific type. I'm not selling it very well here, but anyway, it's essentially about the book just goes into details on your mental state and how to be the best version of you can. But it's all through your through physicality. So most people say your mental state affects your physicality. She says it's the complete opposite way around. So, and the way to test this, and honestly, I've done it and it works, and I'm like, you know what, fair play. If you stand up and you stand in a, or sit down, whatever, if you stand or sit in a positive stance, if you, you know, she calls it the Wonder Woman stance, is one of the ways they stand, and it's, you know, the very typical pose of Wonder Woman, you know, with her hands on her, you know, or like Peter Pan sort of thing as well. Mm-hmm. If you stand like that for 2 minutes, yeah, you'll feel like a bit of an idiot, I'm sure, but I guarantee you'll feel happier. I guarantee if you do it for 2 minutes, if you stand there, you know, just with your chest out, you know, feeling really positive, standing really really tall, and just imagine you're Cleopatra, whatever you need to do, you will feel better. And she says, but by the same token, if you sit there slumped over, you know, your head's dropping, you just got no energy, you'll have no energy because your body is telling your mind, I'm tired, I haven't got any energy. Because if you sit up straight and you sit up with your head up and you know you're engaging, you will have energy. So the book, like I say, it's called Presence by Amy Cuddy. It's an absolutely amazing book on how to be the best version of yourself. And she says, you know, it's one of those things that, you know, before any sales meeting, you know, just, or before any important meeting, she says, you know, and I took it obviously with the sales side of things, you know, tell yourself you're positive, because it's not that self-perpetuating, you know, it's not that, you know, I'm good, I'm amazing, I'm brilliant, I'm sexy, I'm whatever. you know, if you need to tell yourself that, you're not, in my opinion. You know, you don't believe it. But I think it's that thing of, you know, if you act like it, you'll be it. So, you know, tell your body that you are that, and stand up straight, and, you know, and be positive. Walk into the room like everyone should be looking at you. I guarantee it'll make a big difference to how you are. That's been my only real sort of book that I would recommend.
Okay, I like that. Like positive mindset kind of thing, but based on your physical actions.
Yeah, all based on physicality. You know, they're treating PTSD with it now. There's a lot of PTSD that's being treated that way. Rather than treating it as a mental affliction, they're treating it as a physical affliction, because they've realised that, you know, it's, you're responding to a physical threat, and your body tenses because, you know, if it hears a noise, it tenses. You know, it's not your mind doing it, it's your body. Your body tenses. So they're treating PTSD with it, and they're having great results. They're treating so many things with it, and they're finding that it's working really, really well. It's obviously in the early stages now. But she also goes on to talk about the imposter syndrome. You know, there's loads of things that they've diagnosed. You know, like the imposter syndrome is something that I saw someone putting on LinkedIn the other day, and they didn't quote her, which really annoyed me, because they were basically, you know, trying to sell off as, you know, have you heard of the imposter syndrome? Is this? And I was like, okay, but how have you heard of it? Because I guarantee it's through Amy Cuddy, because no one else knows about it. It's a fantastic read, really interesting read. And it's the only thing that, I don't like sales books. I don't like sales training. I don't like business coaches. I don't like, you know, people that tell you what to do when they're not doing it themselves, you know. Mm-hmm. Go talk to the head of Amazon, go talk to Bill Gates, go talk to all these massive, you know, companies. They're not going to Grant Cardone's 10 times. I guarantee they're not going. And, you know, and I go, well, hang on a minute. Right, they're doing it. What are they doing? Well, they're not going to stupid seminars. They're not going to, you know, they might be networking. Yeah, fine, network, whatever. They're not going to these stupid seminars or the, you know, to try and learn business tips. You know, I can't stand, they to me, your Grant Cardones and all those sorts of people that do that sort of thing, they are the slimy salesperson that I'm trying to completely avoid. And so, yeah, don't be that person. That's my advice. If you're not that person, you'll do well.
It's a great point, isn't it? There's a lot of that going around at the minute, that Grant Cardone, that kind of London Real. And the London Real, to be fair to them, is a platform. But behind that, there's an academy where people go to. And I always look at this stuff and I think, am I missing a trick here? Should I go and stuff? And I look at it. Some of them are thousands of pounds to go to these things. And you're there for a morning or a day or whatever. Thousands of pounds to go to it. I'd rather spend thousands of pounds on my business if I had a business, and that's why they're going there. And they seem to be everywhere. And we're kind of getting off tangent, but it annoys the shit out of me. They're absolutely everywhere. You know, you're on Facebook, you know, I'm on all the kind of business groups, obviously, to share the platform, but also get some good conversations on there. But everywhere, everyone's a social media expert nowadays. Everyone's a business coach nowadays. And you just... If you're a business coach and I don't see you behind a big brand like you just said, and also you're only 25, I don't want to talk to you. You're not a business coach. You're not a life coach because you've only lived a quarter of your life. You know, and it seems to be everywhere. We seem to be stuck in this thing. And I think to bring it kind of back to the point, I think we're the same in health and safety as they are in there, is they're going to these people like Grant Cardone and all these other people, and they're looking for that magic wand to fix it. They go there and they go, that's it. That's the one thing I'm not doing. That's going to fix my health and safety problems. It's going to fix my business. Tomorrow I'm going to wake up with the best safety business in the world or the best business in the world. But it doesn't exist.
Of course,
I just find a really good book for the one reason that it puts it into a picture. And I know you were saying earlier about breaking it down. An Accidents to Zero by Andrew Sharman, in the middle of the book, is a windy road. Yeah. And it's loads of these little bits on how to get a good culture.
Yeah.
That to me, I was like, look at all these components. There's like 17 different chapters, and they're all something to action. There's not one trick for me.
I tell you what, then, the other book I'd throw into that, because I do want to pick up on something you just said as well, but the other book I'd throw into that is Can't Hurt Me by David Goggins. The best people to learn from aren't salespeople, in my opinion. They're people at the top of their field and whatever that field is. So Amy Cuddy, like I said, she is entrepreneurial when it comes to psychology and to helping, you know, you be the best version of yourself. So that's why I recommend her. David Goggins is an absolute beast. I don't know. Do you know, have you read the book? Do you know of him or anything like that?
I know of him. I've not read his stuff, but I know.
Yeah. Well, I've got the audiobook, and honestly, I've listened to it about four times now. I mean, the guy has come from hell, literal hell, you know, raised by an abusive, you know, pimp of a dad who beat the crap out of his mum in front of him, used to beat him and his, you know, and his brother, and used to get them working all the time. And, you know, he's just everything bad that could have happened to someone happened to him when he was growing up. And then he wanted to become a Navy SEAL, obviously the version of RSAS, basically was 100 pounds overweight. I can't remember exactly what pounds is in kilograms, but, you know, obviously you can gain, it's a lot of weight, and he had 3 months to lose it, so he lost it. You know, it's just every single obstacle, and to get through the final thing of Hell Week, he had to run on broken legs, and he did, you know, because who doesn't do that, you know, running on broken legs, everyday occurrence. But he did it, you know, he's the top of his field in mental toughness. There is no one that I can think of that is tougher than him, you know, in mind over matter of, you know, if you believe you can do it, you can. And his book is, you know, it's completely transferable to sales, to health safety, to anything you're doing. So I would recommend that book as well. And just going back to your point there, I think you've made a really interesting thing of, you know, these people, you know, it costs thousands of pounds and to do it. And I think, okay, right. So let's look at how many people go to those. There are thousands of people that go. look at what's happened to their businesses since they've been. Have they genuinely 10 times their business? Are they now, you know, billionaires? I doubt it. So I just think it's the proof's in the pudding, and the proof that they're failing is in the pudding. But for some reason, people still want to go for it. And it's going back to what you said and what I said really early on as well, is that people want to get rich quick. So they want to believe it. They go, oh, I'm sure it works. It must work, because otherwise other people wouldn't be doing it. So I'm going to go. It's that thing of, you know, 5 million flies each year. So it can't be wrong. You know, it's ludicrous. And I look at, it's like influencers. What are you influencing? No, you're not. You're an idiot. You know what I mean? You pay for likes, you pay for shares. And unless you're some 18-year-old girl who just all she does is puts pictures on of her in a thong, you know, they're the only ones that get real followers. And we all know why that is. They're not influencing anyone. You know what I mean? No one's going, oh, you know what? I'm going to go into Barbados because look at that. Doesn't that look nice in the background? They're not looking at the background. You know, it's absolute ridiculousness. And it's a culture that we need to change. And I'm hoping it dies out soon, because it blows my mind. And it's just, it's frustrating. It's frustrating because so many people are caught up in it and so many people believe it. And you know, they've got, they want it to work. And I see what, I get it. I get they want it to work, but it's not going to. You know, it's hard work that gets your business to where it is. It's hard work that 10 times your business. It's nothing to do with these guys have got this secret that they're going to teach you. And because otherwise it'd be out there. With the amount of people that do it, do you really think that all those people would keep that one thing that worked to themselves and wouldn't tell everyone? It's, you know, it's ludicrous.
We definitely need to end this, because I think we'll be round. I think we both agree. And I think I do think there are some people out there that have the badge of influencer and probably do deserve it. Mm-hmm. But it is interesting that since I started this podcast and since I started YouTube especially, which was only like a week or two ago, my inbox on LinkedIn has gone nuts of people who are offering me basically likes and subscribers for 50, 60 quid or whatever for 10, and then 100 quid for whatever. And I'm just like, I can understand why people do it. I can understand why it bumps you up the list, and then eventually you'll probably get more subscribers anyway who genuinely want to listen to you, because, you know, the search engine puts you up there and whatever. I get it. But I don't want to do that. And I haven't done that. And I'm quite, you know, my audience compared to some is probably a lot smaller. But I get a consistent audience all the time, and I understand, you know, them and who they are, and I think that's a better way to be. And I do think some people follow that and have that, deserve that title of influencer, like David Goggins, you know, things like, people like that. A lot of people don't like Gary Vaynerchuk, but I quite like him. I think he deserves that kind of title. But then I think he's out there. The one trick pony is out there. I think it's all over YouTube. I think it's all over the internet, and it's hard work. You just said it's hard work. All these people that have slogged it and are, you know, the top of Apple, the top of Amazon, they've worked Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, 24/7. You know, they've decided the business is where I want to go. And I think that's a really good point. Well, we better end it, because we'll be here all day. But that's been a really good conversation. Thanks for coming on, buddy.
No, thank you so much for having me on, mate. Really appreciate it.
Do you want to quickly plug AW? How do we get hold of AW if you want to?
Well, obviously, anyone that's following this, obviously get me on LinkedIn, Richard Kinnaird. AW Safety. So we're going since 2009, so 10 years now. We are the full service provider, competent person packages, fire extinguisher servicing, PAT testing, training. We've got our own in-house training center, but we also come to companies to do training. We can do as little or as much as you want, essentially. Give us a call, 01623 824 516. Or like I said, just if would you be so kind as to link me into this somehow, and then follow me in, and we'll have a chat.
Yeah, we'll put AW's site on there and put you on there, and that we'll get that on in the description.
That's great. Really appreciate the conversation, mate. Thank you.
Okay, guys, I hope you found that interesting. Did you notice the comparison? It's culture. all the stuff that Richard was talking about, relationship management, culture, it's all the same stuff. He's not coming in and telling us how to sell a pen, or, you know, Wolf of Wall Street is how it is and all that. He's just telling us that it's all about relationship management, which I found really, really interesting. If you like this, don't forget to hit subscribe. If you're on YouTube, if you're on iTunes, give us a rating and a review. We really, really appreciate it. And share the podcast, guys. I know you still haven't. Come on, I'm watching. Safe.